Boy, the Royals just keep finding these incredibly unique ways to win baseball games right now. They've been solid, dude. A 1-0 win today against the Atlanta Braves, and we can't wait to talk about that and so much more here tonight on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you, hosting tonight's program. Our producer for tonight's show, Jackson Ogden. 913-586-7965 is our number. It's just the two of us in the studio tonight, so feel free to chime in on the text line. Get involved throughout the show. We're going to talk Royals. We're going to talk trade deadline with, of course, the deadline being at 5 o'clock Central Time tomorrow. Royals have the day off, and J.J. Piccolo has said they don't plan on going to Toronto until after the deadline hits. So him and his staff are going to be out in full force next to the phone lines, taking calls and listening to offers, or maybe doling out some offers here as we approach the deadline tomorrow night. We'll also talk Chiefs training camp. We'll talk about the latest with the Josh Simmons situation. He has been widely talked about here since training camp began. It seems like the battle that we were all looking at has now shifted from left tackle to right tackle. What we've heard from them and what people around the world of the NFL have been saying about Josh Simmons. And let me tell you, Chiefs fans, it has been nothing but glowing reviews thus far. So we will discuss that. We'll discuss some of the negative sides of the Chiefs training camp, in that injuries are starting to pile up a little bit, and a lot of it is happening in the wide receiver room, which is not a fun sight to see, along with some other, you know, assorted items along the way. The Ronald Acuna Jr. injury yesterday. Gilbert Arenas got arrested today in a wild story that I read on ESPN this afternoon, and I want to talk about it because it's a really weird one. We'll talk about my absence last week. I was not here. My wife and I were international. We were in Jamaica for the last week, and it was phenomenal, and I want to talk about it. I want to talk about College Football 26 also, because I just downloaded it. I haven't played it yet, but I want to know what people think. So we'll discuss a whole smorgasbord of items here on tonight's show. But let's start out talking about what happened this afternoon and what happened last night for the Kansas City Royals. And today was a historic night, historic afternoon for the Kansas City Royals out at Kauffman Stadium. 9 pitchers in this game today, starting with Angel Serpa, and then you got Jonathan Bolin, who threw 2 scoreless innings. Schreiber threw an inning. Taylor Clark threw an inning. Hunter Harvey, Steven Cruz, Lucas Ercig, Carlos Estevez, and Sam Long. 9 pitchers for the Kansas City Royals today in a 1-0 victory in 10 innings. I did a little bit of digging and found that it is, I believe, the 2nd time ever that a Major League Baseball team has thrown out at least 9 pitchers in a shutout win in Major League history. That's what the Royals bullpen accomplished today, and they had to. Royals had 3 hits as a team. Mikel Garcia hit a single, Tyler Tolbert hit a single, and Salvador Perez hit a single. That literally, the Royals, and you mentioned this when we were out in the bullpen prior to the show, Jackson, the Royals got 1 guy into scoring position today, and it was because of the extra innings rule. Nobody reached second base during the actual initial 9 innings of this baseball game today. The only reason that MJ Melendez got to second was because of the extra innings rule, and they somehow still find a way to win this baseball game.
It was incredible today. I mean, I don't know what to say other than this team just finds ways to win so far in the month of July as we ramp it down. It's crazy because in June, we were talking about this, Logan. If they didn't win 1-0, they were going to lose, right? Today, obviously, was 1-0, but as we've seen recently, last night was 9-6. Today's 1-0, and they don't even get a guy in scoring position. They're just finding ways to get it done, but that's what matters, is finding a way. It doesn't have to be pretty. Today was very ugly, but they found a way.
And I think that's been the most impressive part of this Royals baseball team post All-Star break, and especially in the last three series, obviously because they've won all three, going on the road to Chicago and beating the Cubbies 2 out of 3 in Wrigley, and then coming home and winning 2 out of 3 against Cleveland at home, and then to take 2 out of 3 against Atlanta. And they've done it in such a variety of ways. I mean, that Cubs series, the two games that they won, they combined to score 20 runs. And then the two games that they win against Cleveland, they only gave up 4 runs as a team. And then in this series against Atlanta, right, you have the 10-7 loss in game one on Monday, which was a tough one to swallow because the hitting was absolutely out in full force, and the Royals pitching staff gives up a franchise record number of walks. Not ideal. You come back yesterday and you win a game 9-6 in which everybody got involved, man. I mean, Vinny had the solo home run in the first inning that really got the ball rolling for this Royals team. And then it started to pour in from everywhere. Bobby had a 2-hit day. Vinny finished with 3 hits. Adam Frazier had a 2-for-4 day. Kyle Isbell had that big 3-run bases clearing double in that game. You know, Jonathan India was able to drive in a couple of runs with his lone hit in this one. MJ Melendez manufactured a double, which went off the center fielder's glove, and he ended up with a 2-bagger in this game to expand his batting average this year to a saturated .083. I mean, wildly impressive.
All-star numbers right
All-star
there,
All-star numbers for All-star MJ numbers. Melendez. Well, we may talk a little bit about that later on. But it's just been fascinating over the past three series. This Royals team's gone 6-3. They're now a game under .500, and they've won it in a variety of ways. They've won it in big-time blowouts where they had great pitching and great hitting. They've won games where the pitching, you know, really had to be the backbone for a lax lineup. And then you've had games where the pitching staff has been really, really poor, and the Royals lineup has been able to buoy them. And that's what we saw yesterday versus today. And today, because of all the injuries to the Royals starting pitching rotation, I mean, listen, folks, the Royals have 3 starting pitchers on their roster right now. Literally, Noah Cameron, Michael Wacha, Seth Lugo. Those are the only 3 active starting pitchers on the roster. Lorenzen's on the IL. Reagans is on the IL. Sounds like we will not see Chris Bubich again this year. Daniel Lynch is in the middle of a rehab stint, although he's been a reliever for most of the year. No word on Kyle Wright. No word on Alec Marsh. So they got to throw out 9 guys to win a game against the Atlanta Braves today, and they do it. It's been absolutely astonishing to see. And as the Royals close out the month of July, it has been the best month of the year for them by a wide margin. They in 23 games here in the month of July, they go 14-9. Prior to that, their best month this year was going 15-13 in May. They hit .265 as a team in May, but the pitching had really dipped. July, the team hit .251 with a .770 OPS. And a big part of that, 34 home runs as a team in the month of July. They hit 24 home runs in June in 100 more at-bats, 97 to be exact. So 874 at-bats in June, 24 homers, 777 at-bats in July, 34 homers. They scored 111 runs they had 111 RBIs, I should say, in the month of July. Their best month before that was 94 back in the month of May. And that's why the Royals have been so much better here in July than at any point this year. And that is a huge part as to why this team goes 14-9 in the month. Bobby with a .315 batting average in July, 4 home runs, 15 ribbies. Vinny hit .276 with 6 home runs and 18 RBIs. And how about Salvador Perez? You know, people were very, very quick back in April and May of this year to try to write off Salvador Perez and say, do we need to try to explore other options? Do we make Freddie Fermin the everyday catcher? Do we consider letting Salvador Perez go or letting him ride the pine and not exploring the possibility of picking up his option for next year. Well, how does Salvador Perez respond? By hitting 341 with a 385 on base percentage, 9 home runs, 20 RBIs. He had 7 doubles and 63 total bases for the month. Salvador Perez is a contender for the July American League Player of the Month. And I'm not saying that facetiously. Like, I'm not saying he's going to get the award, but he will get some consideration for being the Player of the Month in the American League in July with the way that he hit at the plate.
I mean, the entire Royals team just completely doing a reversal. I mean, June was awful.
Yeah.
June was one of the worst hitting months this team has seen maybe ever. I mean, it was so bad, especially at home. They only won one home game the entire month. And you talk about this month. Their accumulative stats, not just the averages, the accumulative stats were better than any other month this year, and they played less games. They had the All-Star break in there. Obviously, they're not going to play tomorrow, so the month is over for them now. But, I mean, if you don't count March, which they only played, what, like 4 games in March?
Right.
This was the best month cumulatively, and they probably played less games this month than they played in any other month of the season. And they blew every other month out of the water offensively. And it really does sometimes come down to your captain, Salvador Perez, coming through when earlier in the season, when guys were on, he wasn't able to come through.
I mean, for the entire month, this team was good. I mean, outside of a few, you know, bad apples, of course, which is to be expected. Like I said, Bobby hit 315. Salvi hit 341. Mikel Garcia hit nearly 270 in the month of July. Vinny hit 276. Kyle Isbell hit around 240, if Kyle Isbell's a 240, 250 hitter, that's phenomenal for this team
in
center field.
With the defense he plays,
exactly.
You will take 240.
That's why he's in the lineup, is to be a great glove in center field. That's what he's there for. And then you look at some of the other contributors. Nick Lofton in limited ABs hit 260. Adam Frazier's hit 300 since the Royals acquired him from the Pirates. You know, Randall Grichuk in limited at-bats is hitting 300, albeit in only 10 at-bats this month. So they've gotten contributions from other guys. Freddie Fermin hit 245 here in this month. And so I think that a big part of it is that this team is starting to come together a little bit more. And the additions, I think, of Adam Frazier and Randall Grichuk could really, really benefit this team moving forward. We'll see how long it stands up. The lineup is going to have more pressure on it now than it has at any point this season, which is nerve-wracking to say the least because of how porous it's been at times, with you having only 3 starting pitchers on your staff right now. Lorenzen should be back at some point. You know, there's conversations being had about Cole Reagans and about him long tossing and that he could be back on the mound next week for bullpen sessions and things like that. But will we see him again at some point this year? We won't see Bubich again. So right now you've got 3 starting pitchers if you're the Kansas City Royals, and that is going to put a lot of the onus and a lot of the ability to win for this Royals team on the backs of those guys hitting 1 through 9. 913-586-7965 is our number. We've got a lot of messages in the text line. I want to take a look at those as we go along. But of course, what's next for the Royals? Well, it's the trade deadline, which is tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern time. So 5 o'clock here Central Time is when the trade deadline will officially hit and transactions will cease. I have absolutely no idea what the Royals are going to do. None whatsoever.
It's a mystery.
I mean, there have been so many names thrown around with this Royals team this year. Some of it just from us and our wishful thinking, others from sources in Major League Baseball. I did not have bringing Adam Frazier back after the year he had last year on my bingo card. I did not have the Royals because we've heard JJ Piccolo talk so much about trading for guys that had control, outfielders with control. Well, what do? You acquire Adam Frazier, who's a utility man, primarily as a second baseman and a right fielder, and Randall Grichuk, who is in his 30s and is on a 1-year, $5 million deal. He'll be an unrestricted free agent when the season ends. Not the two guys I thought the Royals would try to make a run after. Now, it has paid major dividends thus far this year. You know, I mean, Grichuk didn't have a hit yesterday in that 9-6 win, but he drew a very impressive walk after, you know, getting himself into a full count, fighting off a couple of pitches. He gets on to load the bases for Isbell, who clears him. And at that point, it was a 4-3 game. And that Kyle Isbell double makes it a 7-3 game for the Royals, which was that was the game winner in actuality, right? If they don't get that bases clearing double, it might have ended a 6-3 game in favor, or 6-4 game in favor of the Braves. So where do the Royals go next? I have absolutely no idea. Could they go for another bat? Sure. But somehow, this Royals team that has been so good, the pitching has been their biggest boon, their biggest thing to lean on, is now arguably their biggest problem, because you only have three healthy starting pitchers right now. Are the Royals like somehow going to acquire a starting pitcher, right? The one thing that I thought was a guarantee was trading Seth Lugo. And I'm sitting there on a beach in Jamaica last week, and I get an alert on my phone that the Royals have given him a 2-year extension worth like $20, $22 million a year. And I thought, what? I had no way did I see that coming. Big shout out to John Sherman and the ownership group, because I thought there's no way, because we've never seen that with this Royals team.
It is refreshing to see them re-sign guys and pay their own guys instead of just let them walk for nothing.
They have put their money where their mouths are.
It's
in
refreshing.
A lot of ways.
We are so used to them just letting these guys go for nothing.
Yes.
Or hanging on to them too long, like Whit Merrifield, and then getting nothing really in return in a trade.
You could argue Alex Gordon maybe falls into that category.
Yeah.
Paying him rather than...
He kind of wanted to keep him a lifetime Royal. I get it.
I could have definitely gotten behind them paying Cueto or Zobrist and tried to make a run
for sure.
In 16 over him. But I digress. But to give Bobby Witt that massive extension, you know, early in his career, before he had even reached arbitration at that point, right? To give Reagans that deal last offseason to avoid arbitration with him altogether, to now re-signing Michael Wacha last offseason, to giving Carlos Estevez good money to come in and be this team's closer, and now the Seth Lugo extension as well. I don't want to say never, because, of course, the 14 and 15 teams wanted to win, and they made moves in order to make that work, you know, trading for James Shields and Wade Davis and Johnny Cueto and doing those things. But in terms of signing and extending guys to try to continue the winning and try to put this team in a position to continue to win is incredibly, incredibly impressive. And I'm so excited to see what this season looks like from here on out. You know, I think that this goes right in line with what I've said about this Royals team all year. I said coming into the year that I thought if they got to 86 wins, like if they replicated what they did a year ago, that would be a win in my view. I thought this was closer to an 82 to 84 win baseball team. And right now that's about where they're hovering at the moment. And it's going to come right down to the end of the year. They have got some battles as we head into the month of August and into September. They are not out of this thing at all, not by a long shot. Currently sitting second in their division and looking at, you know, you're 9.5 back of the Tigers. Do not shoot to win the division. Despite the fact that the Tigers have been on a downhill slide, 9.5 games out with 2 months left is a really, really, really tough hill to try to get over the top of. But you're only 3.5 games out of a wild card right now. You know, the Yankees, Mariners, and Red Sox. Mariners are holding on to that third wild card spot right now. It is well within striking distance.
And I mean, the rest of the division outside of Detroit is selling.
Yeah.
Minnesota, within the last hour, traded their all-star closer. Cleveland's selling, and you'd anticipate they're going to continue to sell.
And they just lost arguably the best closer
right.
in baseball.
The gambling situation. The gambling curse continues to hit the Guardians, but you would honestly think that the Royals and Tigers are the only two teams in the Central that are going to go for it now. Detroit obviously should go for it. They are a fantastic team, having a great year. Kansas City's one of those teams that, you know, they could go all in and try and, you know, go for it. With that third wild card now, it's become much more possible.
Mm-hmm.
But they also could just kind of stand pat and say, we'll see what happens with what we have. We'll make a few minor moves like Frazier and Grichuk. And then from there, we'll see what happens.
It's going to be interesting to see. No question about it.
Big 24 hours.
Yes, it will be. 913-586-7965 is our number. We'll continue the conversation on the other side. And I'll take a look at some of your messages in the text line as well. You're listening to After Hours. Logan Weber here alongside my producer for tonight's program, Jackson Ogden, here on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
After Hours on 96.5, The Fan. Logan Weber alongside Jackson Ogden. Our text line number, 913-586-7965. We've gotten a lot of text messages here in that first segment. We were talking about the Royals' historic 1-0 win today in 10 innings where they used 9 relief pitchers. Only the second game in MLB history where 9 pitchers pitched in a shutout victory, which is just remarkable. And we talked about the trade deadline a little bit. And I got an 816 here talking about, what do you think about the possibility of the Royals going to get someone like Andre Pallante from the Cardinals, or maybe like a Jermaine Marquez from the Rockies? Pallante doesn't seem like a realistic possibility just because the Cardinals are so strapped in terms of their starting pitching anyway. They have a very, you know, they have a very old staff to begin with, and they have for several years now. Pallante is the youngest guy on that starting pitching staff for the Cardinals this year. And while he's not having a great year this year, he's got a 4.62 ERA across 21 starts. He did have a 3.78 ERA last year. And in his rookie year, as sort of a quasi reliever and starter, had a 3.17. He's only 26 years old. The Cardinals still have a couple years of team control left with him. I think that that would be an expensive giveaway for somebody in Andre Pallante, where you don't know exactly what he can bring to the table. Marquez, I believe, is a much more affordable option for this Royals team, but do you really want to trade for one of the worst starting pitchers in baseball? I mean, he's 3-11 this year, which I get it. He's pitching for the Rockies, and wins and losses are not a great starting pitching stat, but he's got a 5.67 ERA and a whip north of a 1.6. His ERA plus is an 83, and he pitched one game last year for the Rockies, so injuries have been a concern for him. This is not the Jermaine Marquez that was an all-star back in 2021. So that's, I don't see that as it's a viable option for the Royals, but I don't know if that's worth it. And maybe it is, because I think he's an affordable option for a Rockies team that's bad, and he's been with the Rockies his whole career, and they could be certainly much more open to the possibility of offloading his contract, but I don't know if he makes you a better baseball team at the end of the day. You said hopefully they wouldn't command a big prospect like Jensen. Marquez, definitely you wouldn't have to get. I don't think you'd have to get rid of a top 10 prospect in your system for Jermaine Marquez. Do we think the Royals make one more move before the deadline? Yeah, I think they do. I think they make at least one more, right? It may not be a headline leading sort of move by any means. You know, I don't think they're going to go get Eugenio Suarez or somebody like that by any means, but I still think that they could make some things happen, and they'll certainly be open to the offers that are sent their way tomorrow. As I said earlier, JJ Piccolo plans on not having the team leave for the trip until after the deadline concludes at 5 p.m. Central Time tomorrow. So that tells me that he is going to be, maybe active is not the right word, but he is going to be open and intuitive to what goes on at the deadline. He will be entertaining phone calls. He may be making some phone calls himself, and we'll see what happens from there. Somebody talking about the Royals said it was great to see, because the last two nights they were giving up a lot of runs and a lot of walks. Yeah, I mean, Lugo was phenomenal for 5 innings yesterday. And I mean, I can remember he trotted back out for the 6th inning, and I knew he was only at 67 pitches, but I was a little bit surprised, because I'm like, Lugo is typically a 5 inning guy, you know, no matter what his pitch count sits at. And he had been phenomenal for 5 innings. And I'm like, could this be a situation, which has become a little bit of an Achilles heel for Matt Quatrero this year, where he leaves the starter in an inning too long? You know, Michael Wacha has thrown 5 scoreless innings, and he goes out for the 6th, and he gets shelled and gives up 4 runs, and all of a sudden the game turns on its head. Or Noah Cameron's gone 5 2/3, but he's given up a knock and a walk, and so you've got runners on 1st and 2nd. Do you consider pulling him? Q leaves him out there, and he ends up giving up, you know, a 3-run home run, and all of a sudden the game is sideways from there. That kind of just felt like that situation. And then the first couple of relievers that you threw out there was shaky at best, but then Hunter Harvey came in and closed the door in the seventh or in the sixth. And you had Ursig pitched a great frame. And then of course you had Estevez who comes in and closes the door in his own right. It was nice to see them. And it was nice to see them winning in a variety of ways, right? Last night, it was the lineup that did the bulk of the work. And then today it was the pitching staff that did their job. And I got an 816 says MJ should be wearing a bananas jersey. The man is not an MLB caliber player. We were talking about that in the bullpen before the show, Jackson, and I had said, and I stand by the opinion, that I believe when Jack Caglione is healthy and comes off the IL, I don't think MJ Melendez goes down to AAA. In fact, I don't think anybody goes down to AAA. I believe MJ Melendez can and probably should be given his walking papers. It just hasn't happened.
I think a change of scenery is best for both parties.
I agree.
I want to put something out there because I know we're all frustrated with MJ, but I really do feel bad for the guy because he plays really hard. You can tell he's out there. I mean, I get it. You're a pro. You got to put up numbers. Playing hard isn't good enough. But you can tell he really cares. He's not an Anthony Rendon who got paid and just like, I don't really care if I play baseball or not. It's whatever. Melendez genuinely does care, and you can tell it genuinely is hard for him that he's struggling this badly. I just think it's a change of scenery time for him. I don't know if he's going to see anything happen in Kansas City. We've tried this experiment. We're on year four of it now. It's only getting worse. I mean, we were talking in the bullpen, Logan. His second year, he hit 235 with 16 home runs. He's not even close to that right now. He can't even hit 100.
No. He's got a .083 batting average.
It's the worst hitting season I've ever seen as a Royals fan, and that's saying a ton. I mean, that Hunter Dozier was here, Chris Owings. You know, there have been some really bad hitting seasons in Kansas City. I understand that Melendez hasn't been up the whole season, but this is by far the worst.
I think it's time, and I love what you said there. I think that a change of direction, a change of scenery is what works well for both of these teams, because I think MJ Melendez is still, somebody's going to give him an opportunity. Somebody's going to give him a minor league option or something. This is a guy who was a top five prospect in the Royals system at one point.
He had 40 homers one year in AAA.
Yeah.
This guy had potential at one point. It's crazy because him and Prado that one year had tons of power in the minors, and unfortunately neither have been able to find that at the big league level.
And maybe it's a situation where MJ Melendez goes somewhere else and that team decides to put him back behind the plate as back in his natural position as a catcher, which is where the Royals, you know, that's how they signed him as a catcher. Most of his minor league career was spent behind the dish. And then Salvi had this, you know, resurgency after the COVID shortened 2020 year. He had the 2021 season where he was phenomenal, and it kind of changed the thought process, I think, of the Kansas City Royals, because he was looked at 4 or 5 years ago as the heir apparent to Salvador Perez. Well, you haven't needed an heir apparent to Salvador Perez because the guy's in his mid-30s and he's raking. So they had to do something, and I think the move to the outfield I think it's hindered him in quite an impressive manner, I would say. I mean, it is staggering to look at his numbers.
And I would say, look, it worked for Ryan O'Hearn. He was one of the worst hitters in baseball here. He couldn't do anything right. And part of that was the shift. And then once the shift got removed, O'Hearn's numbers skyrocketed. That was big for him. But another part of that was a change of scenery and just, you know, getting another chance somewhere else. Will that happen with Melendez? I'm not sure. But if somebody can go from as bad as Ryan O'Hearn was here to being an all-star for the Orioles, I think there's something there with Melendez. It just might not be here. He might need the change of scenery.
We're going to continue to take a look at the text line here. I'm seeing a suggestion that the Royals should acquire Trevor Bauer. No.
Pass.
Absolutely not.
Hard pass. I'd rather pitch Dallas Keuchel.
No. I respect you having an opinion. And at one point in his career, Trevor Bauer was great.
He was a Cy Young one point. He's getting rocked overseas. The highest ERA in the... He's in Japan, right?
Yeah.
I want to say he's in the Japan League.
I believe so, yeah.
I think that's where he's at.
Yeah. Is it the JPB, Japanese Professional Baseball?
Right now, yeah.
I think it's the league, but...
I get it mixed up sometimes with the guys, the Korean League and that league, but I believe he's... Yeah, I believe that's right.
I mean, he hasn't pitched in Major League Baseball since 2021.
Yeah.
It's been 4 years. And yeah, prior to that, he was phenomenal. He won the Cy Young in 2020, and he was having a really good year with the Dodgers in 2021. The guy's coming up on his 35th birthday at this point, and he hasn't pitched in Major League Baseball in 4 years. And like you said, he's kind of been getting tattooed overseas in Japan. No.
Yeah, this isn't a guy who has like an ERA under one overseas. It's like, okay, we've got to bring this guy back. No, he has an ERA that's one of the highest in the entire league over there.
And it's not even that exclusively. And I'm not even going to bring up the allegations of the off-field stuff.
Of it, yeah.
I'm not talking about the off-field stuff. I'm talking about the clubhouse stuff.
Strictly, yeah.
I mean, field and in the club, he was disliked by his teammates. Like, dramatically. None of his teammates liked him. Anywhere.
I mean, you remember the game in Kansas City, I think it was 2019.
Yeah, with Cincinnati.
Where he just blows up and throws the ball as far as he can over the center field wall because he had a bad inning. I mean, he's always had a temper, and he's never really been a guy that teammates really like having around. I don't see why they would do that. I don't think Bauer ever pitches in the MLB again.
He's a bad clubhouse guy. He hasn't been in Major League Baseball for 4 or 5 years at this point. And it just doesn't make any sense. So I'm going to flat out say no to that one. I will entertain a lot of possibilities, but Trevor Bauer is not one of them. 913-586-7965 is our number. More from the text line coming your way next. You're listening to After Hours here with Jackson Ogden, our producer, along with yours truly, Logan Weber. 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Talking Kansas City Royals, trade deadline, possible acquisitions here as we approach the trade deadline with the Royals having a myriad of pitching injury issues that they're dealing with at the moment. Bubich is done for the year, according to reports. Reagans is getting healthier. We may or may not see him at some point this year. Sounds like Michael Lorenzen could be back in the next couple of weeks. He's about to go off the 15-day IL, but the team has said that they're going to have at least one, if not two, rehab assignment outings down in either Double or Triple A before they bring him back up to the show. Just going down the list a little bit further here. Somebody said that they commented on TV last night that if they could squeeze out one more inning for Lugo, that would help out, especially since today was going to be a bullpen day. And fair point. I was at the game yesterday, so I wasn't listening to the TV broadcast, nor was I aware of the fact that they were going to do a Johnny Holstaff today. But I 100% understand. I mean, Lugo at 67 pitches after five innings, he'd been really, really good up to that point. His pitch count was exquisite. So, yeah, go out and throw him for another inning, and it didn't end up hurting you by any means, right? I mean, he still got the win, gave up, he still picked up a quality, you know, almost a quality start. He went 5 2/3 with the three earned runs. But, yeah, I completely understand the desire and the need to try to throw Lugo a little bit longer because you needed nine pitchers today, and several of those nine pitchers also pitched yesterday for this Royals team, including Harvey, Estevez, and Ursig.
And I'll defend Quatrero here. Lugo was rolling through 5 2/3, like no problem at all, and then out of nowhere, six straight get on base. I mean, you can't predict that. And look, we've given Q a hard time this year for pulling pitchers too early. Cameron's rolling, Lugo's rolling, Walker's rolling, and he puts in Zerpa, and they blow the game, and they're like, well, what the heck? Why did you take him out? He was pitching well. The pitch count wasn't that high. So last night, he lets Lugo ride, and everyone's like, well, why didn't you take him out? You know, he wasn't pitching well. It's impossible to be right all the time as a manager.
Yeah, hindsight's 20/20, right? Everybody's going to have an opinion after the fact because they think they're right. Somebody pointed out that the only person he's ever seen for the Royals that was a worse hitter than MJ Melendez might be Nate Eaton. Whew, that's a name I haven't thought about in a while.
Who isn't doing horrible in Boston, by the way.
No, he's hitting .250, but he's limited at bats. He's only had 27
plate appearances.
Right, it was
limited here as well. It wasn't like he was an everyday guy.
Right, 56 plate appearances in 2023. He had a .075 batting average. His WAR was a negative .6.
Oof, that's bad.
In 28 games, you have a WAR of nearly negative, like over half.
That's hard to do.
Oh, man, that's tough.
That is hard to do.
Somebody says, I still believe in MJ. He needs more ABs. that text message is sort of the equivalent of that meme. You ever seen the meme of that guy with the backpack and that one backpack strap is just like holding on for dear life? It's like, buddy, it's time
just
to let
it go.
Just let it go.
Or I was going to say the one where you're mining for the diamonds. Have you seen that meme? Yeah. And it's like the guy who just will not give up on the experiment versus the guy who does.
Guy with like just like literally 9 single hairs floating on top of his head. Like, buddy, it's over.
It's over.
It's over. Just shave the head. It's time to move
on. We tried.
Yeah.
You know,
gave it your best shot. But I think it's
Melendez
time to move
on. If Melendez
goes
somewhere else and he's good, it will not be because we didn't give him enough chances here. That will not be why.
No. I mean, the guy was a 3-year starter for this Royals team. He played in 129 games in 22. He played in 148 games in 23. He played in 135 games last year. He's had over 1,600 plate appearances in Major League Baseball. That is a plenty enough large sample size there. We have seen enough to determine one way or the other how this is going to go with MJ Melendez, in my opinion. And it's time for both sides to explore other possibilities. I think that's where we are at right now. What do you guys think about bringing in Julio Urias? Who are we suggesting?
No. No. Absolutely not.
Are we just looking to like, nope. Just no.
We're trying to create the 2020 All-Star team now.
Wow. I mean, any other suggestions?
Five years ago, that would have been great.
Woof. What do you think about Shane Bieber? Isn't Shane Bieber still hurt? And I could very well be wrong on that. I mean,
he got Tommy John last year.
Yeah, guy's a former Cy Young winner, certainly.
He's never gotten back to that, though.
But I don't think he's pitched this year.
Really, he got Tommy John at the beginning of last year. He pitched 2 fantastic games and then immediately got Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, yeah. Two games, 2-0.
I don't think he allowed a run.
Didn't give up a single earned run.
That's what I was going to say. I vividly remember this because I had him in fantasy baseball last year, and then I got burned in the first 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, gave up 1 walk, 20 strikeouts.
He was cooking.
Yeah, cooking. A whip
of .91. It looked
like
Cy Young Bieber.
And then he has Tommy John, and he has not pitched at all this year.
The only Bieber you're seeing this summer is Justin. Go listen to the album. Shane's not pitching.
He did just have a rehab start, I believe.
There you go.
For the Guardians. So they could trade him. I mean, he is an expensive option.
I can't imagine his trade value is too high right now coming off of Tommy John.
Yeah, he's currently on the second year of a $26 million deal. Or I should say first year, but next year is a player option. And that option will be $16 million, which, frankly, he would take at this point, right? The guy hasn't pitched in 2 years.
No question.
He would absolutely take that, and then he'd become an unrestricted free agent in 2027 at 32 years old. Would the Guardians be willing to move on from that guy inside the division? Somebody just said Zach Greinke isn't officially retired yet. Should the Royals try that again? I would also say no.
I wasn't totally against letting Greinke pitch out of the bullpen last year because our bullpen really needed help before we got Urseg last year. I was like, you know what? Greinke can't start anymore.
It was 2 years ago.
Correct.
Yeah.
But at this point, he's been out of baseball too long.
Yes.
He would have needed a spring training. It's impossible to say, okay, here you go. Get in baseball, you know, shape. Have your arm ready.
Yeah. Somebody mentions Trevor Bauer. At least he's pitching somewhere. Zach Greinke hasn't pitched in a baseball game since the 2023 season ended, and that season ended with him going 2-15 with a 5.06 ERA. I don't think that's the guy you want to bring up. When the Royals don't pick anyone up, do we consider this year a wash? I think the year was already a wash. Like, what do we consider a success for this Royals team? Because I think that is an important thing to discuss is, I think there were a lot of Royals fans, and rightfully so, because that's part of the fandom, that really thought this team could contend in the American League. I was never one of those people. So if a wash is this team is not going to contend for a World Series, then yeah, it's going to be a wash, and it doesn't matter who the Royals could have, would have, or will acquire. This team is not a contender in the American League, not in my opinion.
I look at it like this. baseball is so random year to year. Go back into the 2010s. The Houston Astros came out of nowhere in 2015 when they played the Royals. You remember this, Logan, in the ALDS, right? Nobody had the Astros going to the playoffs that year. They were horrible the year before. Similarly to what the Royals just did. They made the playoffs in 2024 after a disastrous 2023 season. What people don't remember is that Astros team the next year, in 2016, missed the playoffs entirely. And then after that, of course, they went on to go to the ALCS seven straight years. But success is not always just up, 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 up.
Right.
Maybe you have a little bit of a debt. If you go 80 and 82 this year, I think the fan base forgets we're not too far removed from 56 and 106. I mean, this is still, the foundation is there. And by bringing back Lugo and having your core come back, there's no reason in 2026 they can't find themselves back in the postseason.
And hopefully you get a healthier version of Cole Reagans or a more sustainably healthy version of Chris. But I don't think we'll, I mean, I don't want to speak too far out of turn and try to predict the future, but I would be surprised if we ever saw a version of Chris Bubich again that looks like the Chris Bubich we saw before the All-Star break. That version of Chris Bubich was utterly incredible. Will it ever happen again? I have no idea. But this team is built to be competitive for a long time. I don't want to say they're built to be a contending World Series championship type team, because that's becoming harder and harder and harder to do as a small market team in Major League Baseball when you've got organizations like the Los Angeles Dodgers that are printing money, basically, and deferring billions of dollars because baseball is at its basic, at its inception, an unfair game in a lot of different respects. But I digress. 913-586-7965 is our number. We'll talk more on the other side of the break here. You're listening to After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside Jackson Ogden, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Well, the trade deadline's heating up. In the last half hour, 45 minutes, Jeff Passan's been a busy guy. The New York Mets and St. Louis Cardinals agreed on a trade for All-Star closer Ryan Helsley. So Helsley goes to New York. Meanwhile, prospects Nate Doan, Frank Ellisalt, and as well as Jesus Baez going to St. Louis. And one of the more impressive parts of this, Baez was the 8th ranked prospect in the Mets system, that according to MLB Pipeline. Doan was the 14th ranked prospect, and Salt is not a top 30 prospect of the New York Mets. This is the second trade for a relief pitcher they've made today, in which they have yet to give up a single prospect in their system ranked in the top 100 in Major League Baseball. So the Mets have acquired both Tyler Rogers and Ryan Helsley, two really, really quality relief pitchers, and they haven't gotten rid of any of their top seven prospects in the system.
Pretty good.
That's a pretty good day if you're the New York Mets.
Again, a team that needs to go all in with the Braves having a down year.
Yes, no question about it. So it'll be interesting to see how things continue. Of course, Johan Duran has gone to the Philadelphia Phillies from the Twins. The Phillies gave up Mick Abel and Eduardo Tate, who are two fairly high prospects in the Philly system. Those two going to Minnesota. The Mariners traded for relief pitcher Caleb Ferguson from the Pittsburgh Pirates. The Mets did give up six prospects today, though, in the Rogers and the Helsley trades. They traded away Jose Buto, Drew Gilbert, and Blade Tidwell to San Francisco in order to get Tyler Rogers. But he's been phenomenal. A 1.80 ERA this year. And over the last 5 years, he's got an ERA that is south of a 2.8. He's been one of the most reliable relief pitchers in all of baseball. We'll go down the list of some of these other trades that we've seen here over the last few years. Somebody said, is there any update on Kyle Wright at all? Also, is Alec Marsh due for a call-up? I have heard nothing on either one of those individuals. I know, like, Kyle Wright had gotten called up or gotten the begun a rehab assignment, and then he got hurt. The last that I had heard about Kyle Wright was that he got like an injection for a shoulder thing, or maybe that was Alec Marsh. One of those two guys had like an injection for shoulder tightness or something. But as of now, I don't believe either one of those guys is pitching at the moment, or at least not in game. Maybe bullpen sessions or long tosses, but the updates have not been good in regards to either of those guys being available for the Royals at any point this year as we approach the month of August and the trade deadline. You're listening to After Hours here on 96.5. The Fan, Logan Weber alongside Jackson Ogden. We'll continue to talk baseball, trade deadlines, some of the moves that are happening across MLB. We'll also talk Kansas City Chiefs and training camp injury issues and the offensive line battles that are brewing. And the interesting thing is it's happening at right tackle and not left tackle. All that's coming up here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.